Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Premod Bhavita Haresh Yod Vega Dhainyarti Misritam Lapitam Gaura Chandrasya Bhavyavadbhir Nishevyate. Only the most fortunate will relish the mad words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which were mixed with jubilation, envy, agitation, submissiveness, and grief, all produced by ecstatic loving emotions. All glories to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all glories to Lord Nityananda, all glories to Advaita Chandra, and all glories to all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. While Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thus resided at Jagannath Puri, he was continuously overwhelmed night and day by separation from Krishna. Day and night he tasted transcendental blissful songs and verses with two associates, namely Srup Damodar Goswami and Ramananda Rai. He relished the symptoms of various transcendental emotions, such as jubilation, lamentation, anger, humility, anxiety, grief, eagerness, and satisfaction. He would recite his own verses expressing their meaning and emotions, and thus enjoy tasting them with these two friends. Sometimes the Lord would be absorbed in a particular emotion and would stay awake all night reciting related verses and relishing their taste. In great jubilation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "My dear Srup Damodar and Ramananda Rai, know from me that chanting the holy names is the most feasible means of salvation in this age of Kali." Sankirtana Yagye Kalao Krishna Aradhana Seta Sumeda Pai Krishna Charana. In this age of Kali, the process of worshipping Krishna is to perform sacrifices by chanting the holy name of the Lord. One who does so is certainly very intelligent, and he attains shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sangopangasta Parshadam Yagyai Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti Hi Sumeda Saha. In this age of Kali, intelligent persons perform congregational chanting to worship the incarnation of Godhead, who constantly sings the name of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. Purport. This verse is spoken by Saint Kadabhajana in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.32. For further information, see Adi Lila, Chapter 3, Text 52. Simply by chanting the holy names of Krishna, one can be freed from all undesirable habits. This is the means of awakening all good fortune and initiating the flow of waves of love of Krishna. Cheto dharpa namarjanam bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam shreyakai ravichandrikavitaranam vidyavadhujivanam anandam purivardanam pratiparam purnamritasvadanam sarvatmasnapanam param vijayate shri krishna sankirtanam. Let there be all victory for the chanting of the holy name of Lord Krishna, which can cleanse the mirror of the heart and stop the miseries of the blazing fire of material existence. That chanting is the waxing moon that spreads the white lotus of good fortune for all living entities. It is the life and soul of all education. The chanting of the holy name of Krishna expands the blissful ocean of transcendental life. It gives a cooling effect to everyone and enables one to taste fully nectar at every step. Report. This is the first verse of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shikshastaka. The other seven verses are found in text 16, 21, 29, 32, 36, 39, and 47. By performing congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, one can destroy the sinful condition of material existence, purify the unclean heart, and awaken all varieties of devotional service. The result of chanting is that one awakens his love for Krishna and tastes transcendental bliss. Ultimately, one attains the association of Krishna and engages in his devotional service, as if immersing himself in an ocean of love. Lamentation and humility awoke within Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he began reciting another of his own verses. By hearing the meaning of that verse, one can forget all unhappiness and lamentation. Nam nam kari bahuda nija sarva shaktis tatrapita niyamitas marane nakalaha. Itadrishi tavakripa bhagavan mamapi durdaiva midrisham iha jani nanuragaha. My Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, in your holy name there is all good fortune for the living entity, and therefore you have many names, such as Krishna and Govinda, by which you expand yourself. You have invested all your potencies in those names, and there are no hard and fast rules for remembering them. My dear Lord, although you bestow such mercy upon the fallen conditioned souls by liberally teaching your holy names, I am so unfortunate that I commit offenses while chanting the holy name, and therefore I do not achieve attachment for chanting. Because people vary in their desires, you have distributed various holy names by your mercy. Regardless of time or place, one who chants the holy name, even while eating or sleeping, attains all perfection. You have invested your full potencies in each individual holy name, but I am so unfortunate that I have no attachment for chanting your holy names. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, O Srub Damodar Goswami and Ramananda Rai, hear from me the symptoms of how one should chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra to awaken very easily one's dormant love for Krishna. Trinadapi sunichena, tarori vastahishnuna, amanina manadena, kirtaniya sadahari. One who thinks himself lower than the grass, who is more tolerant than a tree, and who does not expect personal honor, but is always prepared to give all respect to others, can very easily always chant the holy name of the Lord. These are the symptoms of one who chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Though he is very exalted, he thinks himself lower than the grass on the ground, and like a tree, he tolerates everything in two ways. When a tree is cut down, it does not protest. And even when drying up, it does not ask anyone for water. The tree delivers its fruits and flowers and whatever else it proposes, possesses to anyone and everyone. It tolerates scorching heat and torrents of rain, yet it still gives shelter to others. Although a Vaishnava is the most exalted person, he is prideless and gives all respect to everyone, knowing everyone to be the resting place of Krishna. If one chants the holy name of Krishna in this manner, he will certainly awaken his dormant love for Krishna's lotus feet. As Lord Chaitanya spoke in this way, his humility increased, and he began praying to Krishna that he could discharge pure devotional service. Wherever there is a relationship of love of Godhead, its natural symptom is that the devotee does not think himself a devotee. Instead, he always thinks that he has not even a drop of love for Krishna. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments that persons who are actually very poor because they possess not even a drop of love of Godhead or pure devotional service falsely advertise themselves as great devotees, although they cannot at any time relish the transcendental bliss of devotional service. A class of so-called devotees known as Prakrita Sahajiyas sometimes display devotional symptoms to exhibit their good fortune. They are pretending, however, because these devotional features are only external. The Prakrita Sahajiyas exhibit these symptoms to advertise the so-called advancement in love of Krishna. But instead of praising the Prakrita Sahajiyas for the symptoms of transcendental ecstasy, pure devotees do not like to associate with them. It is not advisable to equate the Prakrita Sahajiyas with pure devotees. When one is actually advanced in ecstatic love of Krishna, he does not try to advertise himself. Instead, he endeavors more and more to render service to the Lord. The Prakrita Sahajiyas sometimes criticize pure devotees by calling them philosophers, learned scholars, knowers of the truth, or minute observers, but not devotees. On the other hand, they depict themselves as the most advanced, transcendentally blissful devotees, deeply absorbed in devotional service and mad to taste transcendental mellows. They also describe themselves as the most advanced devotees in spontaneous love, as knowers of transcendental mellows, as the topmost devotees in conjugal love of Krishna, and so on. These are all titles they give themselves, all in Sanskrit and all that. Not actually knowing the transcendental nature of love of God, they accept the material emotions to be indicative of advancement. In this way, they pollute the process of devotional service. To try to become writers of Vaishnava literature, they induce their material conceptions of life into pure devotional service. Because of their material conceptions, they advertise themselves as knowers of transcendental mellows, but they do not understand the transcendental nature of devotional service. na danam na janam na sundarim kavitam ba jagadish kamaye mama janmani janmanishware bhavathad bhakti rahituki tvayi. O Lord of the universe, I do not desire material wealth, materialistic followers, a beautiful wife, or fruit of activities described in flowery language. All I want, life after life, is unmotivated devotional service to you. My dear Lord, I do not want material wealth from you, nor do I want followers, a beautiful wife, or the results of fruit of activities. I only pray that by your causeless mercy you give me pure devotional service to you, life after life. In great humility, considering himself a conditioned soul of the material world, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again expressed his desire to be endowed with service to the Lord. Ayinandana tanuja kinkaram patitanamam vishame bhavam bhurao kripaya tavapada pankaja stitadhuli sadrisham vichintaya. O my Lord, O Krishna, son of Maharaj Nanda, I am your eternal servant, but because of my own fruit of acts, I have fallen into this horrible ocean of nescience. Now please be causelessly merciful to me. Consider me a particle of dust at your lotus feet. I am your eternal servant, but I forgot your lordship. Now I have fallen into the ocean of nescience and have been conditioned by the external energy. Be causelessly merciful to me by giving me a place with the particles of dust at your lotus feet, so that I can engage in the service of your lordship as your eternal servant. Natural humility and eagerness then awoke in Lord Chaitanya, in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He prayed to Krishna to be able to chant the Mahabantra in ecstatic love. Nayanam galara sru dharaya varanam gadgara rudaya ghira pulakera nichitam bapu kada tavanam agrahane bhavishyati. My dear Lord, when will my eyes be beautified by filling with tears that constantly glide down as I chant your holy names? When will my voice falter and all the hairs of my body stand erect in transcendental happiness as I chant your holy name? Without love of Godhead, my life is useless. Therefore, I pray that you accept me as your servant and give me the salary of ecstatic love of God. Separation from Krishna awoke various mellows of distress, lamentation, and humility. Thus Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke like a crazy madman. Yugyayitam nimeshena chakshusha pravishyayitam shunyayitam jagatsaravam govinda vidhena me. My Lord Govinda, because of separation from you, I consider even a moment a great millennium. Tears flow from my eyes like torrents of rain, and I see the entire world is void. In my agitation, a day never ends, for every moment seems like a millennium. Pouring incessant tears, my eyes are like clouds in the rainy season. The three worlds have become void because of separation from Govinda. I feel as if I were burning alive in a slow fire. Lord Krishna has become indifferent to me just to test my love. My friends say, better to disregard him. While Srimati Radharani was thinking in this way, the characteristics of natural love became manifest because of her pure heart. The ecstatic symptoms of envy, great eagerness, humility, zeal, and supplication of all and supplication all became manifest at once. In that moon, the mind of Srimati Radharani was agitated, and therefore he spoke a verse of advanced devotion to her gopi friends. In the same spirit of ecstasy, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recited that verse, and as soon as he did so, he felt like Srimati Radharani. Aslishava pararatam pinashtumam adarshanan marmahatam karotuva yatatata va vidhatu lampato matprana natastu saeva napara. Let Krishna tightly embrace this maidservant who has fallen at his lotus feet, or let him trample me or break my heart by never being visible to me. He is the debauchee after all, and can do whatever he likes, but he is still no other than the worshipable Lord of my heart. I am a maidservant of the lotus feet of Krishna. He is the embodiment of transcendental happiness and mellows. If he likes, he can tightly embrace me and make me feel oneness with him, or by not giving me his audience, he can corrode my mind and body. Nevertheless, it is he who is the Lord of my life. My dear friend, just hear the decision of my mind. Krishna is the Lord of my life in all conditions, whether he shows me affection or kills me by giving me unhappiness. Sometimes Krishna gives up the company of other gopis and becomes controlled mind and body by me. Thus he manifests my good fortune and gives others distress by performing his loving affairs with me. Or, since, after all, he is very cunning, obstinate. He is a very cunning, obstinate debauchee, with a propensity to cheat. He takes to the company of other women, then indulges in loving affairs with them in front of me, to give distress to my mind. Nevertheless, he is still the Lord of my life. I do not mind my personal distress. I only wish for the happiness of Krishna, for his happiness is the goal of my life. However, if he feels great happiness in giving me distress, that distress is the best of my happiness. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that a devotee does not care about his own happiness and distress. He is simply interested in seeing that Krishna is happy, and for that purpose he engages in various activities. A pure devotee has no way of sensing happiness except by seeing that Krishna is happy in every respect. If Krishna becomes happy by giving him distress, such a devotee accepts that unhappiness as the greatest of all happiness. Those who are materialistic, however, who are very proud of material wealth and have no spiritual knowledge, like the Prakriti Sahajiyas, regard their own happiness as the aim of life. Some of them aspire to enjoy themselves by sharing the happiness of Krishna. This is the mentality of fruit of workers, who want to enjoy sense gratification by making a show of service to Krishna. Text 53. If Krishna, attracted by the beauty of some other woman, wants to enjoy with her but is unhappy because he cannot get her, I fall down at her feet, catch her hand, and bring her to Krishna to engage her for his happiness. When a beloved gopi shows symptoms of anger towards Krishna, Krishna is very satisfied. Indeed, he is extremely pleased when chastised by such a gopi. She shows her pride suitably, and Krishna enjoys that attitude. Then she gives up her pride with a little endeavor. Why does a woman continue to live who knows that Krishna's heart is unhappy, but who still shows her deep anger towards him? She is interested in her own happiness. I condemn such a woman to be struck on the head with a thunderbolt, for we simply want the happiness of Krishna. Purport. A devotee who is satisfied only with his own sense gratification certainly falls down from the service of Krishna. Being attracted by material happiness, he later joins the Prakriti Sahajiyas, who are considered to be non-devotees. Text 56. If a gopi envious of me satisfies Krishna and Krishna desires her, I shall not hesitate to go to her house and become her maidservant, for then my happiness will be awakened. The wife of a brahmana suffering from leprosy manifested herself as the topmost of all chaste women by serving a prostitute to satisfy her husband. She thus stopped the movement of the sun, brought her dead husband back to life, and satisfied the three principal demigods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara. Purport. The Aditya Purana, Markandeya Purana, and Padma Purana tell about a brahmana who was suffering from leprosy but had a very chaste and faithful wife. He desired to enjoy the company of a prostitute, and therefore his wife went to her and became her maidservant, just to draw her attention for his service. When the prostitute agreed to associate with him, the wife brought her the leprotic husband. When that leper, the sinful son of a brahman, saw the chastity of his wife, he finally abandoned his sinful intentions. While coming home, however, he touched the body of Markandeya Rishi, who thus cursed him to die at sunrise. Because of her chastity, the woman was very powerful. Therefore, when she heard about the curse, she vowed to stop the sunrise. Because of her strong determination to serve her husband, the three deities, namely Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, were very happy, and they gave her the benediction that her husband would be cured and brought back to life. This example is given herein to emphasize that a devotee should engage himself exclusively for the satisfaction of Krishna without personal motives that will make his life successful. That's why we see in the Dharma Shastras you have all these seemingly strange or unfair verses, like the woman should remain chaste and faithful to the husband even if he is interested in other women, he is full of bad qualities, he does so much nonsense. Otherwise, how do you have entrance into understanding these principles? Because you're not going to jump to transcendence. You're going to understand it through analogies of the material existence. Right? That's how we're going to know. So unless that is available, unless that example is there, how will it be known? Otherwise, the eighth verse of the Shikshastaka remains closed. Therefore, these principles are there in the Vedic culture, which may seem improper, unfair, But yes, they are improper and unfair for those who want to stay and rot in the material world. Those who want to get out and understand transcendental, then justice means what pleases Krishna. Therefore, Srimati Radharani says, I curse that woman who, showing her anger towards Krishna, and he's pleased with that, but then he wants to move farther, but she maintains it instead of giving it up, you know, after some little endeavor. Then she says, she's just interested in herself. I curse that woman. Right? To show some anger to please Krishna, but then when he's more serious, then she gives up that anger. That's suitable. But if she maintains it, she's only interested in herself. Such a woman is a wretch. So therefore, these are realms in which the mundane consciousness cannot be achieved. I mean, mundane consciousness cannot enter like that. So that's, these principles are there because Krishna is the person. Yes. She should abandon, yes, and never take another man. That principle is there. I don't see it. So it's a good point. Huh? The choice is there. The point is she abandons, but that's only so she doesn't have the bad association that she falls from devotional service. But on the platform of material relations between man and woman, she doesn't take up another because of her chastity. And therefore, when the husband does manifest the proper qualities, then the relationship may continue if it is seen as favorable. So that point is there. But that's based on to please Krishna. It's not a matter of I'm leaving him because he annoys me. That there's no right. Does that make sense? There's a difference. If it's a matter of, if I associate with this man, then I'm going to lose my Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is more important than any mundane principle. Because the real man is Krishna. So therefore, then, that association is given up. But, on the transcendental platform, then when Krishna is like that, you can't give it up. So therefore, it can't be your displeasure that the man is behaving like this. Otherwise, then you'll throw the same mentality onto Krishna. Because the point is who we are and what we're thinking now is what we carry with us. It's not something that's not some mystical thing. It'll just disappear one day. We'll wake up one morning fully Krishna conscious. No, it's that mentality has to be cultivated. If we have a mentality to please Krishna, then that will manifest as more and more ways how we can please, more and more understandings. But if we function on our own platform, then yes, that will develop. So one has to be very careful in that way. So my point was being made is that these principles in the Vedic culture are there for a purpose, for a transcendental purpose. Though most only understand them from the mundane platform of justice. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There was a drunkard and all. Yeah. Example is given of Pishima. Prabhupada would say is that she never told Prabhupada. He would always ask her how she was, and that she'd never tell him that her husband was a drunkard, he was a womanizer, and he was a fish eater. You know? So that's the principle. So she'd say everything's fine because it's, you know, her service is going on. Maybe he's not fine, but she's fine. So the point is not the morality, the point is the mentality. That's the thing. it's not so much of what's going on, it's the mentality in which it's done. If that's right, then it works. See, because in these areas, these are beyond the principle. Because the principle is here that we're discussing is not leaving. You know, so that's another point. That's a point of one will do anything to please Krishna. So that aspect is there. So Prabhupada sees it that the wife giving up a husband who is not Krishna conscious as following the mood of this verse. But then what the wife herself has to be careful that she is in that mood. And it's not that she's just dropping because it's a trouble and a hassle. Because if she does, then it may be a problem for her. She'll accept another. And then what's the meaning of her morality? Right? Doesn't mean anything. No, because Krishna, it means if man has more than one woman, it's not considered sinful because everything here is a reflection of what's in the spiritual world. So Krishna has unlimited gopis, but the gopis only have one man. Because Shakti is dependent on Shaktiman, but Shaktiman's independent. So all Shakti is connected to Shaktiman. But Shakti only has its connection to the Shaktiman. It doesn't have, there's not a second Shaktiman. So all these very elevated principles of devotional service are all found in the Vedic culture. That's why it's a perfect culture. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness, from the most esoteric down to the most simple, are found within the culture. That's why it's perfect. But the law of interpretation, the mimamsa, that is important. So we are not interested in the Vedic culture from a moralistic point of view. Our acharyas never have thought well of moralists because they're mundaners. But the point is that the culture imbibes a mentality, and that mentality is useful in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, that chastity, that sense control, that non-violence, that respect, all these things that are the pillars of the Vedic culture, those are all very valuable in Krishna consciousness. But they have to be converted from morality into Krishna consciousness. On their own, what's the big deal? Okay, the wife is chaste, nice. Okay, but why be chaste? Because the principle is if you're not chaste to Guru, you're not chaste to our line, you're not chaste to our leader, if you're not chaste to Krishna, what's the use? Right? And that chastity manifests in a different way with a man. He has to be sense controlled. It doesn't, in other words, the same principle is there, but it comes out differently. The woman is chaste. That keeps her emotions in line. That makes things prosperous. If she's chaste, then you get the results of the relationship. If she doesn't, she doesn't get. The man by self-control, by brahmacharya, then he attains the same thing. If he's sense-controlled, then he will not be frustrated by the movement of the waves of the emotions of the woman. So therefore, you know, when they're favorable, he interacts. When they're not favorable, he's quiet. He doesn't get frustrated. They just move. So unless he's sense-controlled, he can't do that. So that's where the same quality comes in on the men. So it doesn't come in on that because it's a reflection of the male mentality of the spirit of Krishna. Well, the woman's a reflection of the feminine mentality of the women of the spiritual realm. So these are subtle points that one has to know what to take that's useful and what to leave. You know? But it is said that the man, if he has more than one wife, it'll be difficult for spiritual life because then so much time has to be spent on straightening out the situations, making facility, creating emotional stability. So where's the time for spiritual life? You know, unless someone is so powerful and so passionate, then that passion can be engaged in this way. But otherwise, if one doesn't have that, why go to the trouble? So that's why it's a very delicate thing between these various paths. They're based all on the same principle. The relationship between Radha and Krishna and the tattva that is there is the basis of all existence, spiritual and material. But you have to know what applies for the situation. So that is the mimamsa. That is our understanding. So for us, then, it's Uttara Mimamsa of Vyas, of that, then, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of that, of Rupa Goswami, of that, of our Acharyas given to us by Srila Prabhupada. Then we can understand its application. And that's why this whole point of the Sahajiyas is brought out so strongly. Because in getting involved in these things, it's not cheap. It's not cheap at all. Because you see here, the taste is just some discussion. So discussing these points. He says these things, humility rises. As he becomes more humble, the next verse comes out. So unless there's humility, there is no conjugal rasa from either side. Like that. The girl may be proud, but at some moment she surrenders. And as long as she's proud, the relationship is not happening. It's just one obstacle after another. But it increases. But at some point she has to surrender. Otherwise there is no interaction. So without humility, without compassion, without kindness, there's no conjugal rasa. You know, so that, and basically there's no rasas in any sphere, but especially here. So this pride that the sahajiyas have, and that they're only talking about the intimate pastimes, what has that got to do with reality? Here, this is the last chapter. Just to point out, this is the last chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's giving the highest and the conclusions. It's the last part where they describe the pastimes. After that, they summarize the pastimes, and then he gives a conclusion to the book. So this is the last description of the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we've been hearing, what is the mood? It's just a tasting of the rasa. And the verses, the mood, the humility. Right? This is the point. This is what is to be gained. It's not something else. Remembering the pastimes for us is Udipan. Is that you hear these pastimes, then you might think of Krishna. But here, it's just a matter of a word, a movement, a taste. And that's enough to keep Lord Chaitanya up the whole night, quoting verses that enhance that taste, and tasting that with Ramananda Raya and Sri Damodar. So it's different. It's a different category. An experience, yeah. So this experience then is beyond. So this is all the moods of Srimati Radharani, the whole thing. Otherwise, why would it be here? Why would it be in Antyalila? Says the last 12 years he spent the time tasting this. So all these things come up. That'll come up when we go into the purports on this. So it's the whole mood. Is that tasting of the mellows, and it's made up of all these different flavors. So that's what is being gained here. And he's not sitting around and talking the pastimes so much. He's tasting the mood that is tasted in those pastimes. Right? The sahajiyas don't. They talk the pastime, and then they exhibit some so-called ecstasy. But they cannot discuss or taste the mellow. They can't. It's not open to them. The door is closed. They pretend, yeah. They pretend. Yeah. No, it means that love can't be there. Attachment can be there. And that attachment can be based on service. It doesn't have to be a sensual attachment. You know, so love is something else. But because in the material world it's called love, we take advantage of it to point out what is real love. In other words, the examples are all here in the material world that we point out where is its origin in the spiritual world. You know, it's not the thing, but it's useful in pointing out. Like Vishwanath gives the example, is you want to point out the moon. Someone doesn't know what the moon is. So you tell them, see out in the field there's a tree? They know what a tree is, yes. Okay, go up to the top of that tree, yes. Okay, now to the left there's a branch sticking out, yeah? And just above that there's a round, white, you know, effulgent circle. That's the moon. So the branch, the tree, that had nothing to do with the moon. But by the use of it, you can point out the moon. So the emotions, the relations, the interactions of this world have nothing to do with the transcendental. But because they are similar enough that we can get bearings, they become useful. And therefore you say, you know, just as, it means love, is just as the young wife, is not disturbed, that's it, by the burden of the weight of the husband, or the mother of the weight of the child, like this. And there's a third example, a rich man and his wealth, they're great burdens. But because of the relationship, because of what they gain from it, then that affection, then they don't mind. So you get ideas from there. So they have to be there. So that's why the modes of nature present that it's something, but then it's not that. That's why it's Maya. It looks as though it's actual love, but it's not. It looks as if it's actual some enjoyment or something of substance, but it's not. But because it looks like it, there is faith that there is actually substance. Right? Therefore, then we can transfer that faith from the material to the spiritual. That we have faith that there is love, but we don't find it here. And so we can find it there. And we know that it comes in interaction with relationships between the mother, the parents and the child, or the lovers, or the friends, or the servants and the master, or... So, yeah, it's traces, but it's just the modes. It's attachment. You know, and the more that the duty is done, the service is done, the more it manifests properly the symptoms and the results of actual love. And the less that it's done on duty, and then the less it has results in connection, the less one gains from it. So that glimmer is there just so that faith is maintained, so that when you come in contact with the devotees, then you'll have faith in the devotional process and the goals of devotion. Like that. So that's the importance in the material world. No more than that. That's why it looks good, but it's not. It only looks good so that one will have that faith and understand how to look actually in the real place. It looks good, but then you got to look in the real place. You know, the place where the substance. Like that. So that's why these things are there. That's why the culture has to be maintained. Otherwise you break it. Right? If the mother doesn't give everything to the child, how will it be appreciated that Mother Yashoda gives everything to her child, and that's service to Krishna? Otherwise, if selfishness on the part of the mother is taken as standard, then, you know, why Mother Yashoda doesn't get her own time? You know, why does she always have to be doing something for Krishna? You know, why does happiness have to be dependent upon Krishna? Understand? These sinful mentalities then will bleed through into our devotional service. Right? Therefore, so many isms, you know, movements and different things like that that come up that don't have real importance. Like that. The main thing is Krishna's satisfaction. So that's why then one's endeavors are always gently towards the form of piety. Because those forms are similar to the spiritual realm. And then one can relate to the spiritual realm. Otherwise, one doesn't relate. You know, it doesn't mean anything. You don't get taste out of it. Just like you sing the song about the devotees, Krishna taking prasad. So they come, they sit down, they sit in the line, they eat, they're served. Right? Afterwards, they get up, they wash their hands, their mouth, their feet. Then, after that, then, you know, all these things are taking place. So if one relates to this and appreciates that, then one may see that the spiritual is there. You get a glimpse that this is okay. Otherwise, you don't even notice it. Right? It won't be noticed from the song. So you won't relish it. Because you don't know what it is. You don't know it exists. So in the material world, these things exist only so that we're aware of their actual existence. They're not here for us to actually try to taste or enjoy, because there is no taste or enjoyment. But we know that they exist. Otherwise, they won't. Just like one devotee in England was telling me about the this whole importance of the strong family structure. He met one boy, and he was preaching to him, and he was trying to convince him the aspect, you know, that God is the father. And the kid couldn't relate at all. He had never had any father figure in his life. He never had a father. He grew up in a home. There's no such thing as father. What was it? What is he talking about? So this concept that God is the father, he takes care, he cares for us, he loves us. There was no door. He could not relate at all. So he could chant, he could take prasad, he could appreciate that. But this concept that God has affection for us, we're his children, had absolutely no meaning to this living entity. Because he had no experience of it. He didn't know such things existed. So therefore, you may not catch these things. You know? So therefore, the culture is there, and then one appreciates what's going on in the spiritual world. Yeah. Means you're trying to remove, and it means we want to be the controller and enjoyer. Where we run into an obstacle, then we create an ism to remove that obstacle. You know? But it's just a matter of proper behavior. Right? That's the point. Means the child is, you know, dealing in a way that's, the interaction is not happening. So by becoming angry and starting a whole movement, it doesn't make the child respond. So by that kindness and that humility and those other things like that, the child responds. Same with the woman, same with all these different things. It's the same thing. So, therefore, when we run into an obstacle, then we stand up and yell and scream and shout, but it doesn't remove the obstacle. The obstacle is removed by good qualities, not by yelling and screaming. That's the principle. Text 59. My happiness is in the service of Krishna, and Krishna's happiness is in union with me. For this reason, I give my body in charity to the lotus feet of Krishna, who accepts me as his beloved one and calls me his most beloved. It is then that I consider myself his maidservant. Right? Service to my lover is the home of happiness and is more sweet than direct union with him. The goddess of fortune is evidence of this, for although she constantly lives in the heart of Narayana, she wants to render service to his lotus feet. She therefore considers herself a maidservant and serves him constantly. Right? So that principle is there. Otherwise, it's like the idea of Radharani, she's there, she's always with Krishna. Like you see some of our paintings, the pride that is put on Radharani is so mundane. You know, it's to the point where Radharani is saying, here, I curse that woman. And we paint Radharani like that. you know, this anger, and this and that. It's never like that. It's feigned. It's not real. She's not a, you know, middle-aged American woman who's freaked out at because her husband did something she doesn't like. That's not Radharani. So here is her, she's a maidservant. Right? Here, where in the modern Western paradigm is the mood of a woman towards her lover that of a maidservant? You don't see it. It doesn't happen. She's tough, he's tough, they get together and they have a good time. That's it. Finished. You know? And she's, you know, you know, it's just, it's the way it is. But here, Radharani, she feels amazing. So therefore, how do you enter into that? Therefore, the devotees think, you know, Radharani is, you know, butch, you know. But it's not like that. It means these are just the facts. And it makes her want to serve, right here. My happiness is the service of Krishna, not the direct union. And his happiness is in union with me. The direct union, that's his happiness. My happiness is the service. Right? But our idea is, no, when we're together with Krishna, we're there, we're in the front, we're right up there, we're pushed our right up there, and we're doing it right there, then we'll be happy. Just rendering some service or assisting those who are doing, no, forget it. I've heard devotees say this. I'm going to be at the front. I can't tolerate being at the back. Because they have no entrance. Because they've never served in their life. They've always been in the front. They've always just done whatever they want to do. What they want is what they want to do. You know? That's the whole material concept. That's why, you know, when it was mentioned to Mahatma Gandhi, what do you think of Western civilization? He thought for a moment, says, that's a good idea. Yeah, that would be nice, yeah. Because that lack of it, how do you know, how is it? How does it work? So it doesn't work materially, then where's the entrance spiritually? There's such toughness is there. There's no service, there's no humility. And you see, as each of these verses, it's coming when he comes more humble, the next verse comes. And he's taking the mood of Radharani, so that humility goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. Yeah. 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 No, because of that pride of service, I mean, that we are envious, we don't want to admit that. But that's the thing, is that's how we're here, is that envy of Krishna. We want to be the controller and enjoyer. And if you look at every ism, it's all based on somebody who's not controlling and enjoying, putting them in the position of controlling and enjoying. Now they're the controller of their life, now they're the do what they want to do, now all those things that have been closed for them, they get, and it only increases. Because the point is every living entity has been given the opportunity to serve. Like the dog can sit outside, he can protect the devotees, he can take prasad, but he doesn't come inside. Some may say, no, this is not right, he should get equal opportunity. You know, would you want to be outside in the cold wind and rain? You'd want to be inside. Yeah, but we're not dogs. You know, you want to be down at the Ganga eating a dead body? Is that what you want to do? So, they eat the dead bodies, they stay outside. You don't eat the dead bodies, you stay inside. So, you know, this whole concept of these things are just, without the culture, there's no question. There's no question. If one doesn't understand and practice the etiquette, one will not go to the spiritual world. Lord Chaitanya makes that point. If you don't know the etiquette, don't practice the etiquette, you will not go back to Godhead. No ifs, no ands, no buts. Oh, they're sincere. Yeah, okay, if they're sincere, do it. Prabhupada made this point on kitchen standards. He says, if you're sincere, you'll follow the rules. Otherwise, how do you show that you're sincere? You can. These statements by Srimati Radharani show the symptoms of pure love for Krishna tasted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In that ecstatic love, his mind was unsteady. Transformations of transcendental love spread throughout his entire body, and he could not sustain his body and mind. The pure devotional service in Vrindavan is like the golden particles in the river Jambu. In Vrindavan, there is not a trace of personal sense gratification. It is to advertise such pure love in this material world that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has written the previous verse and explained its meaning. The verse referred to here is text 47, the 8th verse of Shikshastakam. Thus overwhelmed by ecstatic love, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke like a madman and recited suitable verses. The Lord had formally composed these 8 verses to teach people in general. Now he personally tasted the meaning of the verses which are called the Shikshastaka. If anyone recites or hears these 8 verses of instruction by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his ecstatic love and devotion for Krishna increase day by day. So that's the Shikha. You're going, leaving us. Yeah, he's got the direct service. One point for the previous point.
We have mentioned, see, also another thing that Jagadam has mentioned, that when Krishna creates something, he creates its nature with it, religion. So, if something is not consistent with this religion, it is against the will of Krishna. And Gita mentioned those actually doing something against the will of Krishna, and the other people who just are also the asuras or demons. So, maybe you want to develop.
Yeah. 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 No, that's the symptom of sincerity is following the process of sadhana bhakti. Because until one comes to bhava bhakti, one doesn't have another choice. At bhava bhakti, then there's no need to follow sadhana bhakti because you're already following a higher path of sadhana. But the sadhana bhakti, if you don't practice it, how do you show the sincerity? How do you show it? You know, it's just like we even see in this world. You can tell somebody you like them, but you have to do something. If you say you like them, but you don't do anything, don't interact, don't, you know, there's no dadati pratigrinati guhyamakiti prichate bhunkte bojayate. How do you know? So there has to be something, you know, like that. You're giving gifts, you're rendering service, you're interacting, you're speaking your mind, something is there. Then it has some meaning. Otherwise, then where's the meaning? It won't be seen. Something like that. Should we continue or? Yeah? Becomes a?
Like I don't have the real, for example, when somebody...
Okay, don't be humble. Just don't be proud. If you can't be humble, just give up pride. That you can work on. Because pride is artificial. Humility is a natural quality, but it has to be developed. It's the natural heart of the pure soul. So you don't have to be humble, but you don't have, you know, but don't be proud. And then by chanting, by associating, by taking prasad, by serving, then these qualities will come. But that's the mentality: is that when this verse Trinadapi Sunichana, when that is used, then you get benefit, then you progress very nicely. Otherwise, then the rest of it doesn't work so good. Practice to be humble.
Increasing
me?
The
oh. So then the one practices humility by performing one's prescribed duties. One doesn't artificially put on an air of humility. It's just by rendering service and doing listening to authority that has to develop humility. It has to. Then when there's a situation where it doesn't necessarily need humility, but one is humble, that's where one sees that now it's become a natural quality. Is there something in between pride and humility? Yeah, neutrality, non-attachment. You know, your sense control. Unless there's sense control, how you'll be humble. Unless there's knowledge, how you'll be humble. Right? When you know that I'm not the controller and I'm not the enjoyer, then you can be humble. Then that, from that humility, you can get tolerance. From that, then you can get respect of others. So they go together. It's not there's something in between. That's not the point. The point was, is if you can't be humble, then at least don't be proud. Then it won't get in the way of your devotional service. Then humility will come with practice. Yeah, that's the point. If one has knowledge, there's nothing to be proud of. Because we're not the doer. As soon as we think we're the doer, that spoils everything. When we chant, will the humbleness come? It means if we hear, then it will come. It means if we hear the holy name, then from that, then these other qualities will come. Like that. Lord Chaitanya makes that point. That's the suitable method for this age to perfection. It's the suitable age. A suitable process. This sacrifice is the perfect process in this age. So everything will come from it. Because from sacrifice comes everything. The Gita says, in the beginning, Krishna gave sacrifice to the demigods and mankind. It said, be thou happy by this sacrifice. So through that, everything that they need is gained. So the sacrifice should give you everything you require and elevate you. So if you only want material facility and elevation of the heavenly planet, then the karmakanda is enough. Right? If you want freedom from the pains of the material world and elevation to the Brahman, then jnana is enough. But if you want to actually situate ourselves in a constitutional position and be satisfied eternally, then we perform the activities of devotion, to please Krishna. That'll elevate us to the transcendental platform. That makes sense? So if we chant, then those things will automatically come. These qualities will automatically come. But we have to know that they're there and see that we're not going against them. Maybe we can't be humble, but we can catch ourselves when we're being proud. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yeah. Yeah, just by practice, it'll come. Because it's authorized, if you do it, then it will come. Just like Prabhupada says, if you don't feel like dancing in the kirtan, just dance, and then you'll feel like doing it, You don't feel that ecstasy to dance, but if you just start dancing, then that ecstasy will come. Because they're the perfect mediums, like that. So even Radharani is mentioning here of that desire to bow down, to Krishna's lotus feet, renders service. She sees herself as maid servant. That gives her the most pleasure, because that's the nature of Shakti, is service. Shaktiman is that's is receiving that service. You know, like that. Means it's either we have to give it up, so it's either we will do it voluntarily or we'll be forced. That's the way it works. It's just like if you're proud of your money, then the next life you'll have no money, so then you'll have to be humble. If we're proud of our beauty, the next life you won't have it, or our power, our wealth, or whatever it is if we're proud of it, then in the future we won't have it, so then we'll have to be humble. And because we're humble and we have the right attitude, then we become qualified to have it, then we get it, and then we become pride, so we lose it, proud, so we lose it. You know? So that's how the system works. So therefore, that's why the Vedic culture is designed so that all these good qualities are there in the natural performance of our occupational duties. Then we have a nice medium to serve Krishna through, and we gain whatever we want. Whatever we need materially will be gained through that service. Because otherwise there's not another option. Economic development doesn't come from anything else other than religion. It doesn't come separately. But religion means the performance of your prescribed duties, so therefore there's endeavor. Because some will say, no, you endeavor, you'll get. But that's karma mimamsa, that's bogus. And even that's perform your duties and you'll get. But by performance of duties, then whatever you need will come. There's not a separate way of doing it. It's not available. Artha comes from Dharma. Without Artha, there's no Kama. You know, and then by dealing with Kama, then you get fried, and then you want moksha. So it's natural. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's that. Yeah. At the same time, is because of following the culture, what they do have is greater. You know, it means whatever they have, the cloth is finer, the spices are finer, it means the facilities are better. You know, for those who have that proper understanding. You know, and for those who don't, then little less. Like that. Yeah, on one sense there's on one level there's more extremes. Like that. Because the wealth that is here, the culture is here, you won't find in the West. Yeah, and at the same time as the unculturedness, you won't find that in the West. You'll find it here. You know, as the Prabhupada mentioned about, you know, it's like Bengal is east, and the farther west you go, the more degraded. So, but he said here, there are two kinds of Bengalis, the best and the worst. There's nothing in between. You don't find an in-between Bengali. They don't exist. They're either wonderful gentlemen or the most terrible people. And Bengalis themselves will tell you this. I've so many times bumped into Bengalis that time, these Bengalis, they're Bengalis. Yeah, you know. So, no wonder Lord Chaitanya left and went to Orissa. Yeah, who can handle these Bengalis? You know, it's like that. You know, so, the best and the worst. So that mood is, yeah. Chito dharpa namarjanam bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam shriya kairava chandrika vitaranam vidya vadhujivanam anandam bhurivardanam pratiparam purnam ritasvaranam saravatmasnapanam param vijayate shri krishna sankirtanam. Let there be all victory for the chanting of the holy name of Lord Krishna, which can cleanse the mirror of the heart and stop the miseries of the blazing fire of material existence. That chanting is the waxing mood that spreads the white lotus of good fortune for all living entities. It is the life and soul of all education. The chanting of the holy name of Krishna expands the blissful ocean of transcendental life. It gives a cooling effect to everyone and enables us to taste full nectar at every step. Purport by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There are innumerable ways to execute devotional service. The Srimad Bhagavatam and the Hari Bhakti Vilas have described many of them. Broadly speaking, some 64 limbs of devotional service are considered the main disciplines or processes of Bhakti Yoga. They are all grouped under the categories of Vaidhi Bhakti, devotional service according to the rules and regulations, Raganuga Bhakti, spontaneous devotional service, and Raganuga Bhakti. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj especially glorifies pure spontaneous devotional service. As Lord Gaurasundar has said, the congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the most perfect form of devotional service. That's what he said. That was the preliminary verse just before Chaitadarpa Namarjana. So approaching the Supreme. Those who are knowledgeable in the transcendental science of the Absolute Truth have defined the Supreme non-dual substance, understood in the preliminary stage through jnana as Brahman, understood farther in its external eternal aspect, it is defined as Paramatma, or as the Supersoul, in the full and complete manifestation of all its potencies and its transcendental nature of complete knowledge, eternity, and bliss. That Supreme Absolute Truth is known as Bhagavan. Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is called Vasudeva when he manifests his supreme opulence, and Krishna when he covers his opulence with his conjugal loving mood. Lord Narayana responds to his devotees in two main devotional melas or rasas, while Lord Krishna is the worshipable object of all five rasas. Lord Balaram, Lord Krishna's Vaibhav Prakash expansion, manifest in relation with his excellences, is the Supreme Lord of Vaikuntha Loka, residing there permanently in his eternal Chaturvyuha expansions. Right. So this is purports on the commentary given by Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So he gives the summaries, basically. So the first thing is to understand that God is the person that we want to relate with. Otherwise, then these verses have no meaning. Otherwise, why you will make endeavor to reach Him? So it's based on the principle is that the first verse already includes that you accept Krishna as the Supreme Person and want to attain the shelter of His lotus feet. Then Chaitadarpa Namarjana, then the Samkirtan mission has some meaning. Proper japa chanted is possible only in the mind. Then the chanter will achieve the desired perfection. Chanting audibly with lips movements is kirtan. It is more effective than japa and brings about the greatest benefit to the hearer. Sankirtan means complete kirtan, for it is unnecessary to perform any other devotional activities if one performs sankirtana. Partial or imperfect kirtan of the Lord's holy name is not the same as sankirtana. Imperfect chanting of Krishna's name is unable to cause the optimum spiritual change in the living entities. This will lead them to doubt the potency of kirtan. Therefore, let the complete and perfect chanting of Krishna's holy name, or Nama Samkirtan, be victorious. So that means that's the first point. There's one. Yeah. So it opens. That's how it opens with. Let there be all victory for the chanting of the holy name of Lord Krishna. Right, so that's just explained why it's the victorious point is that the Samkirtana, when everybody does kirtan together, works together to please Krishna, that then overcomes all these obstacles of impure individual chanting. That will overcome all these obstacles. Then the Samkirtan means then, therefore, let the Samkirtan be victorious because it is the method. One's knowledge of a mundane subject matter is fragmental. In the spiritual world, however, Lord Krishna is the ultimate subject, and being transcendental, this plane remains forever untouched by material nature. By thus discussing transcendental subject matter, or Sri Krishna, one achieves supramundane perfection. Seven of these perfections, specially related to chanting Lord Krishna's holy name, are mentioned in this shloka. Because there's seven parts, right? That are there. Cleansing the mirror of the heart. So that's the first one. Chanting Lord Krishna's name cleanses the mirror of the conditioned soul's polluted heart, which is wholly covered by three contaminations, namely material desires, the enjoying spirit, and ungodly atheistic activities. The most effective process to clean the jiva's heart of all these impurities is chanting Lord Krishna's name. These treacherous contaminations cover the mirror of consciousness and cause the jiva to reject his true nature. Krishna's name alone can free the consciousness of these aberrations. Thus, by constantly chanting, taking complete shelter of the holy name, the jiva gradually receives the reflection of his original form as the servant of Lord Krishna in the mirror of his consciousness. So by chanting, then the heart becomes cleansed, then you can actually see what is your actual position. Then it can be accepted like that. Because first it's seen, and then ultimately it comes to the point of sampatidasa, which means it's inherited, it's gained, it's yours. Otherwise it's just reflected. Because until one comes to prema, one's eternal position is still just this aspect here. The reflection of his original form. Then that comes. Then he gets the form, but it's not his until he comes to prema. Then when he comes to prema, then fully you can say, yes, this is the person. Otherwise, there's the tendency to not. So that's the... Okay, and then stops the miseries of the blazing fire of material existence. So, the material existence only appears to be sweet and pleasurable, but in reality is like a fire in the depths of a forest, which can sometimes burn the entire forest to ashes. Non-devotees who have no faith in Lord Krishna have to constantly tolerate the searing, burning pain of this forest fire of material existence. On the other hand, when Lord Krishna's name is perfectly chanted, the devotees are protected from these scorching flames, even though they are in the midst of the forest, the material world. So then by chanting, one is not affected by the material nature. Then, that chanting is the waxing moon that spreads the white lotus of good fortune. Wholehearted chanting of Lord Krishna's holy name is the highest goodness and significance, munificence. Shreya means benediction, Kairava means white lilies, and Chandrika are the rays of the moon. Just as by the illuminating rays of the rising moon, the lily's white beauty is highlighted in the night. Similarly, the chanting of Krishna's name brings out the best in man and enlightens the darkened universe, showering it with divine benediction. Human society cannot benefit from material desires or sense enjoyment. Speculative knowledge or fruit of activities. But chanting Krishna's name blesses all with the greatest prosperity. Then, it is the life and soul of all education. The Mundaka Upanishad mentions two types of knowledge, material and transcendental. Chanting of Lord Krishna's holy name is indirectly the fountainhead of material knowledge. But it is primarily the life and soul of transcendental or supramundane knowledge. Chanting induces the jiva to break the shackles of false ego and false prestige, a product of material knowledge, and elevates him to understand his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, the ultimate focus of real transcendental knowledge. Therefore, the ultimate focus of real transcendental knowledge, therefore, is chanting Krishna's holy name. Then, the chanting of the holy name of Krishna expands the blissful ocean of transcendental life. Chanting the holy name expands the boundless ocean of transcendental bliss and enables one to fully relish the sweetest nectar at every moment. Only a vast expanse of water is called an ocean, nothing less. Therefore, unlimited bliss has been rightly compared to an ocean. Such transcendental experiences as these are eternal and unfettered by imperfections. Nor does it lack fullness or constancy. Even spiritual nature and objects take on a tenderness and cooling sheen in touch with the chanting of Krishna's holy name. In the mundane realm, the body and mind, and above them the soul, not only become purified by Krishna's name, but gradually and inevitably emblamed by its cooling tenderness. Emblamed? Oh, okay. Becomes, okay, inevitably decorated by its cooling tenderness. Okay. Okay. Then? It gives a cooling effect to everyone and enables one to taste. Oh, yeah. To everyone. The subtle and gross contaminations attend upon the material conception of life have quite devoured the spiritual soul. But these material diseases can at once be terminated by chanting the holy name. When the soul released from his material designations is eager to reach Krishna, he engages in devotional service under the cooling shade of Krishna's lotus feet. And enables one to taste full nectar at every step. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in the Bhakti Sandarbha 273 and in the Krama Sandarbha, Ata eva yadyapyananya bhakti kalao kartavya tada kirtanakya bhakti samyogenaiva. This means that although it is required in Kali Yuga to practice the eight limbs of devotional service, they have to be performed in conjunction with chanting. Sarvat Vastapana. Yeah. Reference and notes from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bhajan Rahasya. Cheto Darpana Marjanam. Oh, okay. The contaminations that cover the mirror of consciousness are swept away by chanting the holy name. For it is the emblem of profound spiritual bliss. For example, Srila Rupa Goswami writes in his Namastika, Suditasrita janarti rasaye ramya chit ghana sukha swarupine nama gokala mahotsavayate krishna purna vapuse namo nama. O holy name, O Lord Krishna, you dissipate the suffering of your surrendered souls caused by their offenses to the holy name. You possess the transcendental form of ecstatic beauty and bliss. And you appear as the emblem, embodiment of sublime joy for the residents of Gokula. You are therefore a fully spiritual entity of the same spiritual nature as the Vaikuntha planets. I offer my repeated obeisances unto you. Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam. It is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 6.2.46, Nata param karama nibandha kanintanam mumukshatam tirta patanu kirtanat nayat puna karmasu sajate mano rajastamobhyam kalilam tato nyata. Therefore, one who desires freedom from material bondage should adopt the process of chanting and glorifying the name, fame, form, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, at whose feet all the holy places stand. One cannot derive the proper benefit from other methods, such as pious atonement, speculative knowledge, and meditation in mystic yoga, because even after following such methods, one takes to fruitive activities again, unable to control his mind, which is contaminated by the base qualities of nature, namely passion and ignorance. So then he gives verses for each one of these. Shloka 2. Nam nam akari bahuda nija sarva shaktis tatrapita niyamitas maranena kalaha etadrishi tavakripa bhagavan mamapi durdaiva midrisham iha janina anuragaha. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, in your holy name there is all good fortune for the living entity, and therefore you have many names such as Krishna and Govinda, by which you expand yourself. You have invested all your potencies in these names, and there are no hard and fast rules for remembering them. My dear Lord, although you bestow such mercy upon the fallen conditioned souls by liberally teaching your holy names, I am so unfortunate that I commit offenses while chanting the holy name, and therefore I do not achieve attachment for chanting. Purport by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. O Lord, out of your causeless mercy, you have manifested your innumerable names and empowered them with your own transcendental potencies. You have not imposed rigid rules for chanting and remembering these names, nor laid down conditions barring anyone from chanting or remembering your name, even during eating, reclining, or sleeping, but I am so wretched that I am not attracted to your names. The word Bahu, or many, indicates the two types of the Lord's holy names, principal and secondary. Principal names include Krishna, Radharaman, and Gopijana Vallabha, which represent the loving conjugal mood of the Lord. The names Rama, Vasudev, Nashinka address him in his opulent reverential mood. Brahma, Supersoul, Paramatma, etc. are his secondary names. They are incomplete, separated, and partial. The Lord's principal names are non-different from him and possess all his energies, while the secondary names represent his potencies in partial degree only. Because the spiritual is turned away from the Lord, he has become imprisoned in Maya's illusory and ephemeral kingdom, bringing down upon himself his great misfortune, all due to his reluctance to render service to Sri Krishna. Anyavilashita, or material desires, karma and jnana, lead to different degrees of mundane enjoyment, deluding the spirit soul into forgetting his real spiritual identity, or swarup, thus causing him to fall into a veritable whirlpool of misery. Under the spell of lusty desires, he becomes intoxicated with sensual pleasures, while pious activities goad him into yearning for temporary heavenly joys. Thus battered about between bhoga and tyag, or indulgence and renunciation, he searches for release, seeking absorption in undifferentiated Brahman. The soul's intrinsic nature and eternal duty is to serve Lord Krishna, but has been obscured by these three impurities. And as a result, his good fortune is being slowly chiseled away. He becomes busy with mundane activities of religiosity, accumulating wealth and enjoying the senses, or else he is frustrated because he does not derive any satisfaction from committing impious immoral activities, thus becoming the ignominious bearer of offenses. When he attempts to chant the holy name, he perpetuates nama-parads. He is unable to chant Krishna's name purely. His chanting is offensive, for he cannot chant purely at this stage. Faced with an awesome, chaotic future, where peace lies beyond his reach, the spirit soul strives for peace, but without allowing lusty desires to harass him. He takes up chanting, but unfortunately he is ignorant and unmindful of his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord and his multifarious potencies. Chanting in this stage is not pure, but he has made a beginning, and he is chanting the shadow name, or Namabhas. His chanting is a mere semblance of the pure name. Namabhas chanting helps one sever mundane ties, freeing him from the material concept of life. Now he becomes eligible to render transcendental devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Elevated souls who are liberated and unaffected by Maya's onslaught obtain pure love of Krishna through unblemished chanting. Seeing the ill-fated destiny of the conditioned soul, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advented, bringing with him the transcendental process of chanting the holy name, instructing the conditioned souls on the holy name. He noticed their abject lack of interest in chanting, But in spite of this dire condition, we find the ubiquitous and causeless mercy of the Lord always ready to give us succor. How to chant defensively. There is indeed a way to escape the steely clutches of Namaparag. One must recognize and isolate the offenses consciously, avoiding them. He must then chant continuously. This alone will keep Namaparag at bay. Namapas chanting elevates one to the platform of mukti or liberation, freeing one from the influence of and dependence upon matter. Thereafter, one becomes competent to chant the holy name purely. All these opportunities provide to us by the Supreme Lord indicate the unlimited perennial flow of his compassion. Simply chanting the principal names of gods brings about the highest and the only real benediction to all humanity. When the jiva strives for insignificant and evanescent material results, he finds himself grappling with the stringent laws of nature and the inexorable influence of time. For one who chants the holy names, the Supreme Lord removes all insurmountable obstacles by his causeless mercy. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhya Lila 28:28, we find this statement. Always remember to chant the holy name, whether sleeping, eating, or waking. Again in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhya 23:78. There are no hard and fast rules for chanting, so chant always. The same instruction is repeated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Regardless of time or place, one who chants the holy name, even while eating or sleeping, attains all perfection. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The fun thing is the person who's harassing the devotees by chanting, then all his associates, they get benefited from that chanting. Yeah. But the chanting is very special. So you can see the whole mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was based on this chanting. The Sankirtan, that's the foundation. So that aspect being there, then it should always be taken seriously that the elements of advanced devotional service are based on the chanting. It means hearing and chanting the Lord's names. That's what Lord Chaitanya is doing when he's tasting these, you know, higher and more deep sentiments. It's all based on chanting. So that's always there. Should never be taken as a secondary aspect. Yes. Yeah. Means the names that it's talking about here are the primary. That's why it's pointed out. But even if one doesn't chant those, the secondary are better than none. But the primary names are the ones that Lord Chaitanya is referring to. Like that. That's the important. That's why he says, like Krishna and Govinda. So we can understand that he's their primary names. Yeah. The others are just describing a potency or a position, you know, like that. He's the greatest, he's the biggest, he's the most powerful. Yeah, like that. Yeah. Yeah, so in the others there's no rasa, because it's only a quality, but there's no interaction. But the primary names means it's based on the Lord's interaction with the devotees. Because why do we stress japa when it's stated that the Sankirtan is the best? Is that because that's Lord Chaitanya's instruction? Is that one chants oneself and one chants with others? So both are done. So one does japa and does kirtan and does Sankirtan. So even of japa, best is kirtan. Because japa has said it can only be perfected in the mind. Because there's two forms of japa. Either very means you use the mouth, but you don't make any sound. Or in the mind. If you do it in the mind is caught. So that's actually the perfection of japa. But kirtan's better than that. That means it's audible. And samkirtan means where many people chant audibly. So it's the best, but the japa is there because your own personal commitment to it must be there, like that. Then that person takes part in the Sankirtan. Jiva Goswami gives the definition of a Ghosti Anandi as a group of Bhajan Anandis who come together to preach. That's a Ghosti Anandi. In other words, he himself performs bhajan. And he performs his bhajan with others, and they make plans and endeavor to preach that bhajan. You know, so the Sankirtan then is the preaching of that bhajan also.
Yeah.
So his meaning is, see, there's two ways we look at it. Bhajan Anandi means he just sits and does his own bhajan. And Ghosti Anandi means he preaches. But what he's giving, his definition of Ghosti Anandi means that Ghosti Anandi is the Bhajan Anandi who preaches. Because if he only preaches and doesn't do bhajan, then where's the example? Where's the potency? So he is preaching and performing his own sadhana. So that's the point. So in other words, he's pointing out that Ghosti Anandi means it automatically includes Bhajan Anandi. Otherwise, we take it that there's bhajan and there's preaching. Because many times you see that. When we get down to fighting over religion, then that's what comes up. The bhajan Anandi, those who are more into bhajan say that the ones into preaching aren't introspective. You know, just chant, just do this and that. Well, what about this? Oh, don't worry about it. They're not introspective. It may be that this person shouldn't worry about it. But when they actually do have come to the point where they do have deep questions and that and meditation, the answer is, oh, don't worry about it, just chant. So then that's a problem. Then those Ghosti Anandis get criticized because where's the bhajan? Where is their deep understanding of the chanting of the holy name, the association of devotees, that? So their bhajan's not going deep, but they're preaching very nicely. And then the others, then they'll get right into bhajan, and then we won't preach, and we don't have the potency, and why we should make more devotees, you know, we should, you know, become more advanced, then we'll have the potency. And then no preaching happens. The movement doesn't expand. So Jiva Goswami's point is that the person who performs bhajan preaches. And the preacher should perform his bhajan. So they go together. But the thrust is on the preaching. The bhajan, it goes, it's just like, you know, you don't say, oh, how is your breathing today? Huh? Is your heart pumping nicely today? Or, you know, what is it doing today? Is it moving like a frog or like a snake or like a, you know, what's? No, that's just automatic, you know. Yeah. So you get into the activity. So the Bhajan Nandis, they discuss the preaching. And now and again, then they also discuss, or when it's favorable, then they discuss their realizations from their preaching and from their sadhana. So then that deepens the other's appreciation, then deepens his ability to and conviction to preach. How? Oh, how complete was Srila Prabhupada? Yeah, Prabhupada, the Acharyas, they were all like that. Like you see, Bhakti Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he preaches, though he's a Bhajan Anandi. But he's preaching. You know, he's telling his disciple to go preach. You know, like this. So you don't have, they don't really have the form. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his Bhajan, Prabhupada's Bhajan. So it's like, they go together. So what we complain about is where one exclusively only performs bhajan and doesn't preach. That's not seen in a good light. Samkirtana is always perfect. Yeah, it means, yeah, she's pointing out that the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says the Samkirtana is perfect. So if bona fide devotees get together and chant, then that chanting will be perfect. While our own individual chanting may or may not be perfect. So that's why one engages in both. Like that. But it's perfect because it's being done, the congregational chanting. It's there because it's considered to be, you know, in Krishna's pastimes. It is the Sankirtan pastimes. Lord Chaitanya has come and is chanting Hare Krishna with his associates to taste the eternal pastimes. So if we perform Sankirtan, then we are in those pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And therefore, if we're aware, then we're in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. It's just a matter of being aware. So the Samkirtan is always perfect. So that's why association of devotees and the Kirtan is always so important.
The Samkirtan also has like different flavors. It's inside the temple, it's in the street. It's in the street, like, becomes more relishable because new people is getting the name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it means both have their flavor. It means is that there it's the distributing the name is the taste. The other one is tasting it in the association of devotees. So both are there. Lord Chaitanya would do both. He'd go out on the streets and do Harinam, and then he would also do Kirtan as Shiva's Thakuras. So both were tasted. So we see ourselves, Prabhupada introduced all these different forms. We would have the Kirtan in the temple, we'd sit down and do bhajans, we would go out on the street like this. So then it was, these all was done. You want to stop here? I mean, this would probably be the last anyway, so it's just a matter of very short time before we're going to fall asleep here. Is it going to end here? Or do this one? Or I think I wouldn't fall asleep, but it's cutting it close. You're happy to sit?
Yeah.
Okay. Trinada piece, I figure we finish on this one. Because after this, then it starts to get more, the purports start to get more far out. If we have time, that's another thing, but we don't have time. Trinadapi suni chena, torori vasa hishnuna, amanina manadena, kirtaniya sarahari. Translation: one who thinks himself lower than the grass, who is more tolerant than a tree, who does not expect personal honor, yet is always prepared to give all respect to others, can very easily always chant the holy name of the Lord. Purport by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The living entity is by constitution an eternal servant of Lord Krishna, and therefore his eternal dharma is to chant the holy names of the Supreme Lord. Whether he simply transits this material world or permanently enters the spiritual sky, there is no better means for humanity's all-around benefit and success other than chanting the holy name. Chanting brings good fortune to others and all auspiciousness to oneself. So this verse is where perfection is attained, because then the chanting goes on perfectly. This shloka was spoken for the sole purpose of focusing how to avoid nama-aparad and nama-bas in chanting, because that was the last verse. Last verse is because of nama-aparad, you know, then I have no taste. So here is how to avoid that. One whose intelligence shies away from Krishna and rushes instead towards the intoxicants of material enjoyments can never perceive his true infinitesimal stature. By nature, one who tries to be an enjoyer does not realize the reality of his insignificance, nor can he be tolerant. He is not at all inclined to give up his false ego and false prestige. A gross materialist is unwilling, even incapable, of acknowledging anyone as an equal. The Vaishnav who experiences ecstasy in the Lord's is unwilling, even incapable of acknowledging... What is going on here? Oh, I see. Real serious typo here. Huh? The Vaishnav who experiences ecstasy in the Lord's name, on the other hand, is humbler than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, is unconcerned, even unwilling to receive respect, but is eager to offer respect to others. Such an elevated soul alone is worthy of chanting constantly. When these pure souls offer their praise and worship to the Guru and senior Vaishnavas, they do so out of manada. And when they give advice to disciples and sadhakas to chant, they encourage them with words of appreciation. In this case, they exhibit their innate quality of amanina, desiring no respect or praise in return. In other words, they praise others in humility, and they praise others who they're trying to, those who are senior. And those who are junior, they praise to inspire them. A pure devotee understands that these words of praise and appreciation are not empty mundane vauntings, but acknowledgement of spiritual qualities. And if the foolish misinterpret this as mundane, then he tolerates their railings, thus exhibiting deep forbearance. This is the nature. The unalloyed Vaishnav who chants offenselessly considers himself to be lower than the straw in the street that is trampled by the walking masses. A true saint never thinks himself to be a Vaishnav or claims to be a guru. These two things here, claims to be Vaishnav or a guru. These two points are the subtle forms of control and enjoyment. Like that. So they're the last snares within Bhav Sadhana to be cleared. When those are cleared, then the path is free to develop prema. As long as one thinks one's a great Vaishnav or he is a guru of Vaishnavs, then he won't. Progression will stop at some point. If it's very great, it'll be now, and if it's not, it'll be tomorrow. Like that. So at any stage, one can't cross the middle stage. One cannot perfect the third stage of Bhav Sadhana without giving these two up. He regards himself humbly as a disciple of the whole world and as the most meek and fallen soul. Knowing every atom and the infinitesimal spirit soul as a residence of Lord Krishna, he never mistreats anyone as his inferior. He is not wanting anything, nor does he require anything from anyone. Even if others are envious and spiteful of him, he never retaliates. On the contrary, he prays for the well-being of his tormentors. Right? Praise for the well-being. It means that if they are advanced, then they will not do these things because they're destructive for them. It's not destructive for him. As we mentioned, Manu mentions that the person who is insulted, he can sleep peacefully because nothing's happened to him. Right? But the person who has insulted another, they'll be destroyed. So therefore he prays for the other's well-being, that they will be freed from this. In other words, mentality will change, they'll be uplifted, they'll give up this mentality, you know, therefore they won't suffer. Artificial or obstacle? Okay, yeah. Because there, when we're taking on the mood of humility, then we psych ourselves into the thing that we're useless. Therefore, we can do nothing. Therefore, we do nothing. So that's the mode of ignorance. That's not actual humility. That's pride. So when the humility results in non-performance of service, that's actually pride. It just is. It's just the inverse of humility. I mean, inverse of pride. In other words, you feel I should be the greatest kirtan leader, and when I lead kirtan, the devotees will just be fainting in ecstasy, and afterwards they'll come up and pat me on the back, say that was great, or I give a class, everyone will be in ecstasy. Anything I do, everyone. But since I'm not confident I'm going to get that, therefore I don't do it. Therefore I'm so useless. I'm so this. I'm so that. I'm this. That. I'm that. But it always still comes back to I. I'm useless. I'm terrible. I'm disgusting. It's still just about myself. No, humble is just I'm Krishna's servant, so therefore I'm not proud. That's why he mentions here. Pure devotee understands that these words of praise and appreciation are not empty mundane vauntings, but acknowledgments of spiritual qualities. And if the foolish misinterpret this as mundane, he tolerates their railings, thus exhibiting deep forbearance. Because the guru is sitting on the asan. The qualities that the disciples are mentioning are real. Right? So then others say, oh, he's proud, he's sitting there, this and that. No, this is just an exchange of culture. But he sees it that it's there, they're real, those qualities are there, but they're reflected from his superiors. They're actually their qualities. But by service and by the blessing of Guru, they've been reflected in us. That's not our business to negate. Oh, yes, I'm so useless, therefore the potency of the holy name and the blessings of my Guru can't work on me. I'm so special. I'm the biggest demon in the universe. Even Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, and Ravana, they got blessed. But I'm even more than them. I can't be blessed. No. Point is it's real, it works, but we're not proud of it. Because it's them. They're doing it. They're blessing us. They're giving us. Right? Somebody gives us something, a gift. We may feel undeserving. We don't just toss it away. That would be ungrateful. So it's accepted, it's used, but it's used with humility. Yeah, that's really funny. Oh, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. You're not the most anything. Yeah, that's so classic. That one. Yeah. No, it's a whole culture. Because Krishna comes to us through the devotees. Like that. Until you're on the perfect platform, then only you'll get direct audience and interaction with Krishna. That's what Krishna tells Narad Muni. You know, it means you're in the stage of bhava, so just to increase your desire, I have come. But you won't see me again until you've attained, you know, you've actually perfected this desire. When it comes to the stage of complete attachment. So that's there. So if the point is, but Krishna, only Krishna is the guru. So he comes to us through other devotees. So that if we can't respect that, then how are we respecting Krishna? You know, that's the point. People who can't tolerate gurus being worshipped generally also don't really tolerate Krishna being worshipped. And they themselves don't do much worship. Some do, some don't. But much of the time you see. Because the point is the person themselves is to be humble, but you can't get around the culture of it. Like there's that essay by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He opens it like that, mentioning his point, you know. Just look at him sitting there, you know. Who does he think he is? You know, the brute. He uses all these really strong language, you know, just sitting there and enjoying all this and that, and makes this whole thing of how the mundaner will see the guru sitting there receiving praise. Then afterwards, then he qualifies it. No, but it is, you know, on behalf of the acharya, this, that, and then he defeats the whole thing. So that's the point here, is that humility is if we think I'm preaching, that's proud. But if so, therefore, then we don't preach. Oh, I'm so, you know, if I go out there and I speak because I'm such a great speaker, then, you know, I'll become proud and all that. So that's pride. That's not humility. But to go out there and boldly give the message that the founder and the guru and the acharyas have given, that's humility. It's their word. They said it. Therefore, I don't say it. I'm not saying Krishna's God. I don't know who God is. I don't know. But I know my guru. He said he's God. So therefore, faith in the guru, then I'm saying here's God. Getting there. That's humility. But that'll be seen as pride by the materialists. Someone who boldly preaches, they'll be called proud. But no, it's the acharya said. How can you doubt? How can we doubt? So that's humility. But to not preach, not that, oh, this, that, oh, maybe this, or maybe that, then that's pride. Oh, we don't want to use this, we don't want to use that. Prabhupada said that, but you know, I don't know the time. Maybe it worked in the 60s, but now it's a different time, you know, like that. You know, only difference is they figured out what it's a razor blade. That's about it. But other than that, then, you know, wash their clothes and shave their face. That's about it, you know. So then it's different. So that's our pride that we think we know better than the acharya. Prabhupada's written the books for the next 10,000 years. We use our intelligence to apply it. But if there's any doubt that Prabhupada didn't know what he was talking about, or it applied then, it doesn't apply now, that's pride. That's not humility. Therefore, there's no potency. Therefore, there's no progression. Like that. Yeah. Like that. Armchair speculator. At best. Oh, that's interesting. The next paragraph. The devotee who chants the holy name offenselessly never rejects the devotional process he received from his guru, nor introduces a new method, replacing the Maha Mantra with some concocted and imaginary rhyme. A Vaishnava's humility cannot be doubted or challenged if he preaches the glories of the holy name and writes books, as long as he strictly adheres to the instructions of his guru. One who tries to cheat and deceive others by making a show of humility, although he lacks it, just to gain cheap adoration, is not truly humble. The Mahabhagavat who is constantly chanting does not see the material world as something for him to exploit for personal gain, but as diverse paraphernalia for rendering service to Lord Krishna, his associates and devotees. He does not think that this world is his to enjoy. Although he becomes proficient in chanting, he never considers giving up the Maha Mantra. He is not interested in propagating new ideas and opinions. He realizes that to regard him oneself as a guru of Vaishnava devotees strikes the death knell of his humility. So he's just giving what he's received from his guru. So he's not guru. His guru is guru. But we're not guru. We're just repeating what he says. So to preach that strongly That then is humility. Lord Chaitanya, the plain truth is that one who does not heed Lord Chaitanya's instructions in the Shikshastika prayers is chasing after material gains. His sole intention is to satisfy his senses, thereby forgetting his true spiritual identity. He begins to hanker for cognition, recognition, and the status of an elevated Vaishnava and Guru. But the holy name can never be chanted by such offenders. Even an otherwise sincere and faithful disciple cannot become worthy of hearing and chanting the pure holy name if he hears from such an offender. Okay, so, end here. Any other comments? Or? No? Yeah, quality, every quality needs to be engaged without pride. Because if pride's there, it won't be engaged properly.
If you try to retreat, say, no, I will not do this because of pure pride, the loss to Krishna has to be engaged.
Yeah. It means there's a natural humility that one can say, but one feels others are more qualified, so they should do. But if they insist, no, you do, they do. You know? It's not that they keep at it. That's that point, is that the girl may show some reluctance, and this will give pleasure to Krishna. But if she continues that, then that's her own pride. So the same way as one may present oneself as humble before an assembly of those who one feels is more advanced or one's equals. You know, even junior, whatever. But he sincerely feels that he's not the qualified person someone else is. But if they all decide, no, we as your seniors say you should do it, and then he won't do it because of his so-called humility, that's pride. Yeah, that's not real humility. Because he's been ordered. It means if you're humble, you've been ordered, so you do it. No, 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 I can't. So that's pride. Oh, see how pride, I didn't do it. You know? So, you know, like that. Yeah? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Shikshastaka ki, Samavita Bhaktivrinda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanandi.